thank you very, very much for speaking with me, and congratulations on the extended run and all the reviews. When Des Makhanov suggested the importance of being earnest to you, what was it that appealed to you about directing the play?
Nothing at the time he suggested it, because I wasn't a fan of the play. And I think it's probably because I hadn't seen a really good production of it. The best reading of it that I had seen was the Anthony Asquith movie with Michael Redgrave, and luminous performances by Margaret Rutherford and Miles Mallison. Do you remember that?
I do.
I think it was made in the 40s, wasn't it? And I thought that was pretty good. Of course, cut to ribbons, because it was a movie. But some good performances. Redgrave was too old, and Michael Denison was Michael Denison. But Joan Greenwood, with a vocal span of, you know, I think Dorothy Parker said A to B, you know. She said about somebody that they ran the gamut from A to B. and of course, Joan Greenwood did that as an actress, but she made it work. Dorothy Tutin was Cecily, and she was very good. And I thought it was kind of jolly, but I'd never seen a good production on the stage, and so I wasn't really a big fan of it. It seemed to me sort of rather showy-offy and rather kind of a litany of aphorisms, and became predictable. And I just wasn't a fan of it. But when Makhanov suggested it, I read it very, very carefully a few times, saw very quickly that Lady Bracknell was a fabulous part. But I also saw, because he wanted me to direct it too, I also saw that I thought there was a possibility that it might be able to be done in what I considered a stylish way. And my definition of the word style is similar to Michel Saint-Denis' definition of the word style. There is a wonderful book that he wrote called The Rediscovery of Style, which I read quite often, and I always read it before I direct a play of style. And anyway, I thought maybe there is something more interesting that you people just being kind of superficial and kind of poncing around. And so the play gradually got my interest, which sounds like a very pompous thing to say, but it did. And so eventually I decided I would do it.
Can you expand a little bit on what it was that this particular book that you've mentioned tells you about style?
Well, Michel, who I had the great honor of working with, because Michel was responsible for a lot of legendary theatre schools, one in Strasbourg, the Young Vic in London, and the Juilliard Drama School here in New York. And Michel asked me to be a founder teacher at the Juilliard School in New York, along with a lot of other people. And we went off to Connecticut, and Michel and his team coached us about becoming teachers. And it was at that time that I found out that there was a book called The Rediscovery of Style. And Michel's idea of style, which I concur with in a big way, is that style is very often misunderstood. It's perceived sometimes as being the way you take your snuff or use your fan or move in your period clothes, or bow or curtsy, blah, blah, blah. Michel viewed style as something much deeper than that, and something to do with actually who the person was in a very dimensional way. Michel knew, of course, that you could only recreate the past through the present and through your own experiences. But he urged this definition of style as being something much, much more than something superficial. And so that's what I mean when I use the word style. I've stolen his concept of it.
And is that approach what helped you to turn a play that does sometimes seem like an edifice of epigrams and plot devices into something that's more than the sum of its parts?
Well, I think it has happened in this production of The Importance of Being Earnest, and a lot of people corroborate my feelings about it. I mean, for one thing, people say, which pleases me no end, that it's very accessible, it's very clear, it's very, that you don't miss a word and this kind of thing, but that also the people seem to be inventing their text as they go along. And of course, that's what I want to try and achieve. I mean, I know that it's a satirical farce, naturally, obviously it is, and that the people are absurd, and in fact, that Oscar was a precursor of the theatre of the absurd. But as stupid as these people are, and Oscar was saying, you know, high society in 1895, they don't have a thought in their heads. There's a vacuum where there should be a mind or an intellect. That's one of the big things he was saying. But at the same time, these people did not consider themselves as being stupid. They considered themselves as being quite the opposite to that. And so our approach was very, very serious and as dimensional as we could, which makes it a tricky way to go and a difficult way to go. But in my view, it seems to be the right way to go.
Because otherwise they're just standing there saying, oh, look, we're doing Oscar Wilde. Watch. One reviewer confidently mentioned a homosexual subtext, and I have to say, other than the fact that Algernon is an outsized sort of person, I'm not sure I see it. Do you? Or is it people reading Wilde's life into his works?
I think it's a bit of that. But I think there are a lot of coded homosexual references. All the names are sort of rather camp names of usually male friends of Oscar's and Bose's. And of course the address before the Albany was a famous gay man, I've forgotten who it was, a friend of Oscar's. And of course the word Bunbury has obvious and rather tasteless connotations. And of course there are very alarming references when you know a lot about Oscar Wilde. For instance, Three's Company and Two is None, because when he was writing this play, he was down in Worthing, of course, with his wife and children, and a monstrous nanny who turned into Miss Prism for posterity. But Bosie was at the local hotel, and for him to say Three's Company, Two None is a bit spooky under those circumstances. Also, all the references about dying in Paris, and when you know as much as we do about Oscar, you can, if you want to, you can see a lot of gay references. I don't think there's any future in it from the point of view of an enjoyment of the play, The Importance of Being Earnest.
When you say that, it makes more emotional sense of the fact that it's all about subterfuge as well, that his whole life must have been about subterfuge to some extent.
Absolutely. And about secrets and double lives, you know. Yeah, absolutely.
In your interview with Ben Brantley, you mentioned that one of the reasons you felt you needed to get away from England was that there was a kind of trap about having to be in a world in which you always had to try to be witty, which also sounded to me a little like Wilde. I wonder if you feel that even before the trial there was something a little sad about him.
That's an interesting thought. I don't actually think there was something sad about him before then. I mean, I think Oscar did get married and have children. I don't think he was absolutely sure that he was gay. And I mean, I don't think he did it for reasons of ambition or reasons of respectability or anything. I think he because, you know, he was very involved with quite a few women, and I think he adored women. The difference between me saying to Ben Brantley that I, you know, I always felt I had to be clever and witty and everything was that it didn't come easily to me to be clever and witty. And so it's not very good if somebody's trying to do that. But it was second nature to Oscar because Max Beerbohm and a lot of other people have gone on, a lot of other friends of Oscar's have gone on record saying that, yes, Oscar wrote some marvelous plays, one superb classical play that would live forever, and they were absolutely right, The Importance of Being Earnest, but it wasn't ever quite as good as sitting with Oscar and listening to him. And with The Importance of Being Earnest, we, as actors in that play, we have this incredible privilege of spouting Oscar's own conversation. As you know, he wrote the play quite patently to make money. There's a wonderful letter. I have an Oscar Wilde show, a one-man thing, which is Oscar's amazing story told through his letters. It's a very, very interesting thing. And when we did Ernest in Stratford, Ontario, I did it as a sort of companion piece in a different theatre on a different night. And there is a wonderful letter from Oscar pitching The Importance of Being Earnest, which perplexingly at the beginning was called Lady Lansing. But there's this letter where he gives the outline of The Importance of Being Earnest, Lady Lansing. The gist of the letter is, could you please send me £150? Because if you find this interesting, please send the money. Because as usual, Oscar was terribly hard up. And this sort of crazy irony is that one of the greatest plays in the English comic tradition just came out of somebody wanting to make money. Oscar was virtually out. Because he and Bosie were behaving very, very crazily and kind of disgracefully, really. But in The Importance of Being Earnest, he came out as a writer, and I don't mean he announced his homosexuality, but he just thought, I'm just going to be myself here. I'm just going to try and see if I can just do a play that doesn't pay any lip service whatsoever to plays of the time, which his previous plays had done. They all had a morality, they all had a story, you know, they were all rather earnest, really. And he just thought, no, I'm just going to see, you know, I can do this, you know. So he kind of gave us all his conversation.
The risk he took in life didn't work, but the risk he took on the stage really did. Let's move on to that incredible piece of architecture, Lady Bracknell. I gather she was your first big role after Lear. Was that part of the attraction? I mean, in the one role you throw your entire humanity into it, what do you start with Lady Bracknell?
Well, as I said to Des McAnuff when he said, why don't you direct Ernest and play Lady Bracknell? I said, well, I suppose it is a natural follow-up to Lear. What do you do after you've played Lear? Lady Bracknell, I suppose. And I've said this a few times, but it's absolutely true. I did approach Lady Bracknell in a similarly serious way that I approached King Lear. Because that's the way I work. And you know, it's to do with what I was just saying about these people not being absurd to themselves, that being Lady Bracknell takes herself very, very seriously. She actually believes, like a religion in society, and all the mores of society, all the requirements, the money and the morality, in quotation marks.
It must have been interesting, having established your sense of the man as a character, to then, from his perspective, step into one of his greatest characters.
Yes, it was. Oscar as a man, I mean, you do fall in love with Oscar when you really, really scrutinize all that we know about him. You can't help it, because he's irresistible. What surprised me in all the reading that I did do was that nobody, to my knowledge, compared Lady Bracknell to Queen Victoria, the woman sitting on the throne, who, of course, created everything that Oscar was sending up in The Importance of Being Earnest. Because, you know, we are not amused, and all the kind of intense morality that she brought to her own situation, and she was a very popular and revered woman, and all her values were emulated by her people. But I'm surprised that nobody's ever, I mean, we know, of course, that Ernest is a very subversive play. You know, in little ways, like when Lady Bracknell says, I don't want any French songs, because people always seem to think that they're improper, and they either laugh or they look shocked or something, which is vulgar, you know, for her last reception. She says, but German is a very respectable language. And, of course, that's Oscar being very, very naughty about Her Majesty and about all the German connections.
Even with that as a model, what I was wondering was, she doesn't have much backstory, except you know that she married into her class. So where do you begin developing the role? Do you just start with the language? Do you try out the voice? Where do you start with her?
You do start with the language. Everything, everybody in The Importance of Being Earnest starts with the language. You are what you say. So it's a big, good tip for any actor. You've got to start with the language. The language is everything. And then you start. We decided to go the hard way and try and make these people as dimensional as possible, and to be absolutely sincere and real in their ridiculous behavior and beliefs and everything. But that's the hard way to go. It's a difficult thing to choose to do, but you have to do it.
Is that why she doesn't really resemble, as I thought she might before I went to see it, the traditional panto dame, who's a much more outsized sort of character, but quite a number of reviewers have mentioned how really nuanced the performance is. You don't do many things that are outsized or to draw attention to the gender issue. It's more working from within her.
This is true. I mean, I seem to specialize I do a lot of Molière. And I love doing Molière, and for the same reasons that I love doing Lady Bracknell, for some curious reason, I find as funny as the playwrights who created the characters. I find it funny that people are absolutely, utterly humorless and very deluded and egotistical. I find all that just as funny as, obviously, Oscar found it, and as funny as Molière found it. So it's strange, but that seems to be my specialty.
Does it help that she's not quite female? She really is more of a Gorgon or a battleship than an actual woman.
Well, it's interesting, because in the four-act version, you know, it was written originally as four acts, and thanks to George Alexander, who is the great actor-manager with whom Oscar had worked a great deal on his other plays, thanks to George Alexander, who changed the play from four acts to three acts. There's a marvelous story about all of that. They started rehearsing it in four acts, and everybody was getting a bit sort of nervous because there seemed to be a bit too much text, and it seemed to kind of lose its way now and again. And so George Alexander, and Oscar was defending all this very strongly. And so they did a sort of classic thing of saying, why don't you go and have a holiday somewhere? And they mentioned the magic word, which was Algeria, that Oscar loved and loved to go there and behave disgracefully. So Oscar said, oh, well, that sounds rather a good idea. So he went and joined Bosie in Algeria. In the meantime, George Alexander changed the play from, first of all, cut about 40 minutes out of it, and changed it from four acts to three acts. And when Oscar got back from Algeria, they were already in dress rehearsal. So he was watching the dress rehearsal, and Oscar sat there watching this thing. And at the very end, he turned to Alexander and he said, it's very strange, he said, because I once wrote a play very similar to this. But thank God that George Alexander did this. Oscar eventually realized that it was a fabulous idea, a series of ideas that Alexander had realized with his play. And in fact, as you know, the only literary task that Oscar set himself after jail and all that stuff was a preparation of an edition of The Importance of Being Earnest for publication. And Oscar included all of Alexander's cuts. I mean, he could have put them back or done whatever he wanted to, but he obviously became reconciled to this huge improvement in his play. And he improved it even more. There are changes and emendations and stuff, and this is what you see in our production, with a few tiny little bits from the original four-act version, which I just couldn't resist, and just some good stuff that I thought was there.
Could you mention one of them?
It's just little bits here and there, and I mean, one of the lines is, Jack is urging Lady Bracknell to remember, because he wants to find out what his name was so that he can, you know, get in Gwendolyn's good books if he's called Ernest. And he says, can't you remember what my father's name was? And she said, no, your poor dear mother always addressed him as General. And so I couldn't resist that line. And that was from the four-act version.
But if it hadn't been for these tactful emendations, this could have been the rarely produced treasure of Oscar Wilde's that occasionally gets resurrected by an ambitious company.
Yes, I've actually seen it, and this is much, much better, this streamlined version, and there are characters that exist that don't exist in the present version. There's Moulton the gardener, he is actually there and doesn't pay off, and Algy. They come and arrest Algy because he has this gigantic bill at the Savoy Grill.
How hard is it to be a major role in the piece and also be directing it when you yourself are on stage? Have you got someone representing you who helps you to align yourself as a character?
Yes, I do. I have somebody that I've worked with for over 40 years, Robert Beard, and he was originally my stage manager, and now when I do direct something that I'm also in, which happens with an alarming frequency these days, I couldn't do it without him. We've worked together for so long. He, of course, attends all the rehearsals, so he knows what we're trying to do, and we're on the same page. I couldn't possibly do it without him because, of course, I can't see previews. Although, thanks to all the technological miracles that occur today, now I can actually have performances videoed. I can have them filmed, and they go on to a thing about the size of a large postage stamp, and I can bring it home and plug it into the television set.
Olivier used to say that he knew he had a character when he could feel his feet. What does it for you?
Well, I certainly, when I get into those magnificent frocks that Desmond Healy designed for me, and the marvelous wig that Paul Huntley made for me, you're halfway there. But of course, I spent a lot of time preparing this part and this production. In fact, for the New York production, I had the luxury of having about 9 months' time to re-prepare it. And so I sat in California and with my feet in the pool and did a lot of rethinking.
You are often described as a consummate classical actor, and you addressed this a little bit earlier in our talk. How do you find living in what is often very heightened language and very formalized situations? Why is that a comfort zone for you?
I think, Sarah, when you get used to the classics, this is probably true if you're a dancer or if you're a pianist or any kind of musician. If you get used to the classics, everything else seems a bit diluted and a bit thin, you know. When we were all at theatre school, the great experience, and I'm talking about in the 1950s, the great experience that we had was any night of the week except Sunday, you could go and see great actors in great plays. The list is absolutely endless. John Gielgud, Laurence Olivier, Vivian Leigh, Michael Redgrave, Eric Portman, Margaret Leighton, Edith Evans, Paul Scofield. It just goes on and on and on and on. And we all became addicted to classical plays. Classical plays are called classical plays because they're the best plays that have ever been written. Nobody kind of forces them on, on audiences. They are just the best plays that have ever been written, and they just come to the surface for every generation since the time that they were written, and they have just as much meaning, Hamlet has just as much meaning today as it has when it was written in 1600 or whatever it was.
Now your run is continuing through July. What comes next for you?
Well, I had committed to directing The Misanthrope in Canada at Stratford, and also playing a cameo role, the part of Oront. And so we had to turn Stratford upside down so that I could do the extension. We're extending till the 3rd of July. I was supposed to start directing The Misanthrope May the 13th or something. I'd done a lot of work on it with the designers. It was all designed, all cast. And so Stratford bent over backwards to make this extension possible for me. But part of the deal was that I would go and play that part in The Misanthrope. So after we finish on the 3rd of July, I do get a couple of weeks, and then I have like four rehearsals, I think it is, before doing a preview of The Misanthrope. So how crazy can you get?